Well, how good are you at taking the initiative? Is it something that you find natural to do, or do you struggle a bit with it? I guess most of us would be inclined one way or the other. You might identify yourself with Peter, with a go-getting disciple who strode confidently out of the boat, onto the water in the midst of the storm, and walked towards Jesus before sinking. Or maybe you'd have stayed in the boat. And you might think of yourself as a Martha, one of Jesus' friends in the Gospels. You always need to be doing something. You like to make things happen. Whereas Martha's sister Mary, she was more of a person who was perhaps a bit more reflective. She preferred to let things happen, to let other people take the lead. And perhaps that's you. Perhaps you prefer to sit back and let others get on with things. Well, whether you're a Peter or a Martha or a Mary, this passage has something to say to all of us this morning. You see, the chapter is full of people taking the initiative. It's full of people doing things, not just sitting back and waiting for things to happen, but getting out there and doing things. So if chapter 1, which we saw a couple of weeks ago, was all about God's sovereignty, then this chapter is all about human action. And the two don't contradict each other. God's sovereignty doesn't cancel out human initiative. In fact, the one provides the impetus for the other. And as we see this together from this passage, my prayer is that those of you who find it natural and easy to take the initiative will be able to make sure that it's being done so in a way that is being provided with the right impetus and going in the right direction. And for those of you who are more like Mary, those of you perhaps who like to sit back and wait for things to happen, that you be freed to do those things that you long to do, but perhaps never thought that you could. So let's get into this chapter, and you'll find it helpful, as I said, to have it open before you. And it begins with the theme of rest. And we saw that in verse 1 in the English Standard Version that was read for us. My daughter, shall I not seek rest for you, that it may be well with you? So firstly this morning, we're going to look at the theme of seeking rest from verses 1 to 9. Seeking rest. Now, if you've got an NIV in front of you, it translates the meaning of what Naomi is saying. She says, should I not try to find a home for you where you'll be well provided for? And that's what Naomi means by rest here. It's the security of marriage and a home. That's what she's seeking for Ruth. But I wanted us to see how Naomi uses this specific word, rest, because it's not the first time that she's used that word. She used it back on the road to Bethlehem in verses 8 and 9 of chapter 1. If you want to flick back there, you can find it. Naomi said to her two daughters-in-law, go back, each of you, to your mother's home. May the Lord grant that each of you will find rest in the home of another husband. Now back then, on the road to Bethlehem, Naomi wanted the Lord to find rest for Ruth. And she could only imagine that rest being found back in Moab, back in Ruth's homeland, with Ruth's own people and Ruth's gods. But now, here in chapter 3, Naomi is trying to find rest for Ruth. And it's here in Israel, in the Promised Land, and amongst the people of God. So what's happened? Well, Naomi's life has been turned around. Hope has dawned during the barley harvest, and now Naomi can start dreaming again. So she takes the initiative. She plans for Ruth's future. How different this Naomi is to the one that we met back in chapter 1. She no longer thinks of herself as the victim. She's no longer blinded by her bitterness. She can't see beyond her suffering. And she's changed now. The Lord has given her hope. He's given her a future. And that frees her to take the initiative on Ruth's behalf. And your brothers and sisters, he can do the same for us. When it seems like hope has gone, when you can't even begin to make plans, let alone take any action, don't give up. If you're in that situation, if you're in chapter 1 with Naomi, don't give up, because you don't know what God has in store for you. You don't know what's just around the corner waiting for you. Trust that God is still at work in your life. He hasn't stopped showing his kindness to you, even though it might look that way. And because of that, there is hope. Now, Naomi and Ruth's hope lies in this man, Boaz. He was one of the family's kinsmen redeemers. And we were looking at last week what the kinsman redeemer meant. And remember that in Jewish custom, a kinsman redeemer would marry the widow of a dead Israelite and so preserve his name and his inheritance. And that's what Naomi hopes Boaz is going to do for Ruth. She's on a matchmaking mission to rescue her family line. But I don't know whether you notice as we read the passage that she cooks up a slightly left-field plan to do this. I mean, it certainly raises a few eyebrows. Just look at what she says again to Ruth in verses 2 to 4. Boaz is winnowing barley tonight at the threshing floor. Wash, therefore, and anoint yourself. Make sure you smell nice. And put on your cloak. Make sure you look nice. And go down to the threshing floor. But don't make yourself known to the man until he has finished eating and drinking. But when he lies down, observe the place where he lies. Then go and uncover his feet and lie down, and he'll tell you what to do. And we might expect Ruth to say to that, you want me to do what? A young, available woman dressed up in her best clothes with a splash of Chanel No. 5 is to approach an older man under the cover of darkness while he's sleeping and lift up his cloak and then lie down at his feet. And then she's to wait for him to tell her what to do. I mean, what exactly did Naomi expect would happen? But Ruth simply replies, well, I'll do whatever you say. So she goes down to the threshing floor, and she does everything her mother-in-law told her to do. Of course, she makes sure that she lies down to the next to the right man. It would be a disaster if she'd have got the wrong man. But imagine Boaz's surprise. He wakes up in the middle of the night with cold feet, and there's a beautiful young woman lying there at his feet. No wonder his first words are, who are you? Now, do you see how risky this all is for Ruth? She's a young woman. She's alone with an older man at night in his field, and she's lying at his uncovered feet. Now, it's worth pointing out that this wasn't the normal way that a woman in those times would seek a husband. It's probably not recommended for you to do that today if you're seeking a husband. And verse 14 implies that tongues would have been set wagging if people had found out what was going on at the threshing floor. It was a provocative midnight manoeuvre. And it could have gone one of two ways, neither of which would have been very good. I mean, just think about it. Boaz could have taken advantage. I guess a lot of men in that situation would have done. Or he could have taken offence. I mean, he was an upright, noble Israelite. He followed the law of the Lord. And here's a young woman lying at his feet. So Ruth and Naomi's future hung in their balance. Their journey towards redemption, their hope and their future, it could have all ended here at the threshing floor. So how is Boaz going to respond? Well, it all depends on Ruth's answer to his question, who are you? And so out of the darkness of the night, and amidst all this confusion, comes these words in verse 9. I am your servant, Ruth. Spread the corner of your garment over me, since you are a kinsman redeemer. And what she's basically saying is this, Boaz, I want to marry you. Spread the corner of your garment over me. Cover me with your love, your protection, the warmth of your fellowship. Since you are a kinsman redeemer. And Boaz knew exactly what that meant. He knew exactly what Ruth was asking of him. She wanted him to fulfill his family responsibilities to her and to Naomi and to their deceased husbands. Wow. Ruth certainly leaves no doubt whatsoever. That's what she's after. But from what we have seen of Ruth so far, and from what Boaz goes on to say about Ruth, this perhaps seems to be a little bit out of keeping for Ruth's character. I mean, it seems a bit like a brash move, a bit forward, approaching this man at night in his field. But the Ruth that we've seen is noble and humble. What do I think that the storyteller wants us to see is that this episode isn't out of keeping with Ruth's character. It isn't out of keeping with her nobility and her humility. That Actually, far from being brash, it's a subtle, faith-driven act of loving kindness. And here's the key for understanding it that way. It all hinges on one particular word that Ruth uses, and it's translated in the NIV as garment, but the ESV goes for the more literal translation of wings. Spread your wings over your servant, for you are a redeemer. Now, where has the word wings been used before in the book of Ruth? Well, back in chapter 2 and verse 12. And who used that word? Well, it was Boaz. And who was he addressing when he said it? Ruth. He said, "May the Lord repay you for what you have done. May you be richly rewarded by the Lord, the God of Israel, under whose wings you have come to take refuge." And here, on the moonlit threshing floor, Ruth is now using the same word as she addresses Boaz. So what's going on? Well, Ruth had left her home. She'd left Moab. She'd left her gods, her family, and she'd chosen to identify herself with the people of God. And what Boaz says in chapter 2, verse 12, that what she has done is she's taken refuge under the wings of the Lord, the God of Israel. She's left everything else. She's left all other sources of identity, of protection, of security. And she's come to him for rest. She's come to God to find his refuge and his rest. But Boaz is saying a little bit more than that. See, Ruth is experiencing this refuge of God and all its blessings in the field of Boaz. So Boaz has become God's agent to bless Ruth for her faithfulness to him and to Naomi. And if you think better in pictures, there's a graphic up on the screen to show how that works. So Ruth has come under the wings of God, but she's experiencing that refuge through Boaz. And there's the most subtle offer here held out by Boaz. He's saying, "Ruth, if you come under my wing, if you come into my field and experience my protection, then you'll experience the blessings of being under God's wings. You'll experience his blessing and his protection. And Ruth, I want to be the wings of the Lord for you." Could it be that this was some kind of cryptic code for saying, "I want you to be my wife"? Well, if that is what Boaz is saying, then Ruth now makes clear that she's picked up on this subtle offer. "Spread your wings over me." In other words, it's a yes, Boaz. Naomi had sought rest for her daughter-in-law, and she sent her to Boaz. And now Ruth, in humble faith, approaches Boaz and seeks that rest for herself under his wings, under the wings of a redeemer. And this is an illustration for us of the way that a lost sinner finds rest under the wings of Christ, the great Redeemer. Our hope is found in him alone, that there's no other source of redemption for us. Our future, our hope is in him. And we need him desperately, just like Ruth desperately needed Boaz. And so we come to him in faith, not with brashness, but with humility, because the offer has come from him first. "Come to me, all you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest." And we respond to him, "Spread your wings of love and protection over me, for you are my Redeemer." Now, Ruth couldn't be totally sure what Boaz meant in his words. That's why it was a subtle, faith-driven act. But Jesus leaves us in no doubt whatsoever of his intentions for us. The offer's clear. "Come to me," he urges us, "and you will find rest for your souls." Now, you won't become a follower of Jesus by just letting things happen. You need to make a decision. You need to act on that decision. And Jesus has taken the initiative. He's come to us. He's given us that offer of rest. So will you now come to him and experience that rest for yourself? But perhaps what's stopping you from finding that rest isn't a lack of action. It's that you want to get on and do things yourself. You don't want rest. You want to be doing things. You don't want a redeemer. You think you're fine by yourself. Well, Ruth recognized her need for rest. She knew that she needed redemption, and she found it under the wings of Boaz, her redeemer. I wonder if you've recognized your need for rest. Perhaps you've been trying yourself to find it in certain places. There's many places in this world where you can find rest for a time, but it won't last. But there is a Redeemer who's offering eternal, soul-satisfying rest to you this morning, if you'll come to him. Well, if the first half of this chapter was about seeking rest, then the theme of the second half is sacrificial kindness. Sacrificial kindness in verses 10 to 18. So come back with me into the story. Ruth has just answered Boaz's confused question, "Who are you?" And perhaps there was a brief silence as Boaz let Ruth's words sink in. The words that he had longed to hear. "Spread your wings over me, my Redeemer." And then he replies in verse 10, unable to hide his joy. "The Lord bless you, my daughter. This kindness is greater than that which you showed earlier." Now, there may have been other men that Ruth could have gone after. There may have been younger men, perhaps even better looking than Boaz. But Ruth had chosen him. And this was an even greater act of kindness than the one that she had shown previously. And what Boaz, I think, is saying here is, "Ruth, you had the pick of the men in Bethlehem, but you've chosen me for the sake of Naomi." That's who Ruth had shown kindness to earlier. She had shown kindness to Naomi. And this was an even greater act of kindness to Naomi. Now, Boaz has been shown kindness here, but Naomi is the primary target of Ruth's kindness. And that's why it's sacrificial kindness. Ruth is putting the future of Naomi's family first before her own. In fact, Ruth has so committed herself to Naomi that Naomi's future and Ruth's future are one. Naomi's hopes and Ruth's hopes are the same. And no wonder Boaz says in verse 11 that everyone in Bethlehem knows that she is a woman of noble character. She's showing sacrificial kindness. And this kindness is motivated by love. The word kindness here is the Hebrew word hesed. And it's often translated loving kindness, a kindness that is driven by steadfast love. A teacher once asked her class to give her the meaning of loving kindness, and one little boy put up his hand and he said, "Well, if I was hungry and someone gave me a piece of bread, that would be kindness. But if they put a little bit of jam on it, well, that'd be loving kindness." So loving kindness is kindness with jam on top. Kindness with the richness of love. And that's what Ruth is showing to Naomi as she asks Boaz to be her redeemer. And the question this raises is, how was Ruth able to do this? How was Ruth able to show this kind of sacrificial loving kindness? How was she able to selflessly commit her future to Naomi when she could have sought her own happiness, her own future? What drove her to step out in this remarkable act of loving kindness? Well, the answer lies in the place where she'd found rest. It's because she's resting in the Lord, because he's her refuge. She is free to risk her own happiness, her own future, for the sake of another. And in doing this, Ruth becomes the means by which Naomi finds redemption. Boaz, we think of him as the redeemer in this story. He is the one who is the kinsman redeemer who provides what Ruth and Naomi long for. But actually, it's through Ruth that Naomi finds redemption. And Ruth provides us with a picture of Jesus, the great Redeemer, and the sacrificial kindness that he has shown to us. See, Jesus chose to so identify himself with us, with fallen human beings, that our future and our hopes became his future and his hopes. He left everything behind to follow that road of redemption, the road that would lead him to Calvary, to the cross, where he would sacrifice his own life so that we could have life and an eternal future. And he was able to do this because he was completely secure in the love of the Father. From before the beginning of time, Jesus, we're told it in John chapter 1, was resting in the bosom of the Father. And because he was secure in that love, he was able to risk everything for us. So do you see the link? Do you see the connection between trusting in a sovereign God and taking the initiative in bold, even risky acts of sacrificial love? One provides the impetus for the other. When we find our rest in Jesus, we're able to take risks for Jesus. We're set free to show his sacrificial love to others. And Boaz gives us another picture of sacrificial kindness in this chapter. In verse 11, he says he's going to do everything that Ruth has asked of him. He's going to redeem her. And the story is going to end happily ever after. They're going to be married. It's going to be wonderful. But there's a twist in the plot. Verse 12. It is true that I'm a redeemer, yet there is a redeemer nearer than I. What? You mean there's somebody else who could end up marrying Ruth? That's not how it's supposed to end. And so we're left on tenterhooks. We're wondering, how is it all going to pan out? Will this other redeemer spoil everything? Or will it end happily ever after? Well, you already know how the story finishes. But this little twist gives us an insight into Boaz's character. It's night time. He's alone with the woman that he loves. She's just told him that she wants him to marry her. And she's still there. She's still lying at his feet. Now, if this was a Hollywood film, what do you think would happen next? Well, thankfully, this isn't Hollywood. This is true love. And true love is not defined by the fulfillment of sexual desire, but the demonstration of sacrificial kindness. I'll say that again because it's important. True love isn't defined by the fulfillment of sexual desire. It's defined by the demonstration of sacrificial kindness. And our culture finds it really hard to understand that. Our culture would be shocked at what Boaz does, his self-restraint in this situation. I mean, who cares about this other redeemer? Boaz has come to him for rest. Ruth has asked for him to spread his wings over her. And yet Boaz is willing to risk losing Ruth, losing his future happiness, perhaps, to this other redeemer for the sake of righteousness. See, Boaz knows the law. He knows what is pleasing to God. And so he chooses the path of self-sacrifice and not self-indulgence. You see, Ruth, like Boaz, had found his rest in the Lord, his hope, his security, his provision. It was all found in the Lord. And because of this, he can risk his own happiness for the sake of righteousness. And so there's the link again. We can only show the kind of sacrificial kindness that we see in Boaz and Ruth when we find rest ourselves under the wings of God. You might think that when you come to Jesus for rest, that life becomes cozy and comfortable. That you don't need to take the initiative in life anymore because, well, God's got everything mapped out for us anyway, so we don't need to. That we'll be free from danger and risk. But that's not how it works. In fact, it's quite the opposite. When we find rest in Jesus, it frees us up for risky adventures of faith. It allows us to set aside our own fears and our own future and choose instead to faithfully follow God and to show sacrificial love to others. That's what Ruth and Boaz did. It's what Jesus did. It's also what a 21-year-old woman called Anne Haseltine did. A man called Adoniram Judson had fallen in love with her, and he wanted her to become his wife and to go with him as a missionary to Asia. And that all sounds very romantic, but the problem was this was back in 1810. It was 200 years ago, and no missionaries had ever left America for a foreign land. If Anne survived the journey to Asia, across the ocean, then there would be a hostile climate to deal with, and perhaps an even more hostile people to evangelise. She would be exposed to degradation, to insult, to persecution, and perhaps even a violent death. I wonder how you would have responded to an offer like that. Many people disapproved. They called it a wild, romantic undertaking. Even wilder, perhaps, than going and lying down next to a man on a threshing floor at night. But Anne saw it differently. She wrote this. She said, "I am a creature of God, and he has an undoubted right to do with me as seems good in his sight. He has my heart in his hands, and when I'm called to face danger, to pass through scenes of terror and distress, he can inspire me with fortitude and enable me to trust in him. Jesus is faithful. His promises are precious. Were it not for these considerations, I should sink down with despair." And so Anne, just 21 years old, left everything behind her because she knew that her life was secure in the hands of her Redeemer. So have you too discovered that Jesus is faithful? Are his promises precious to you? A climber who's scaling the face of a mountain without a rope, without any security whatsoever, will be afraid of making the next move. What if he made a mistake? What if he fell? It'd be a disaster. And this world around us, it has no rope. It has no security. So it would advise Anne Haseltine not to go to Asia. It would advise Ruth not to leave Moab and to go to Israel with Naomi. It would advise us not to take any risks whatsoever with our own future and our own happiness. Don't go out and show other people sacrificial love. Look after number one. That's what this world would advise us. But a climber who is fastened securely to the mountain, who knows where his security is, can step out, can take the next move with confidence, with boldness. He might not be reckless, but he can take risks. He can do it knowing that he's not going to fall. And if you're afraid of stepping out to do something for God, then remind yourself that your life is in his hands, that you're secure in him. Jesus is faithful. His promises won't fail. I wonder what act of faith is he calling you to do? Who could you show sacrificial kindness to in this coming week? And if you are full of initiative, if you're full of action, then how are you going to use that to show the sacrificial kindness of Christ to others? Will you place others first and yourself way behind? Will you sacrifice your own desires for the sake of righteousness? I think there's a message here for husbands. Are we prepared to take the initiative today in loving our wife? Could she say genuinely, that she is experiencing the blessings of being under the wings of the Lord through us. The refuge, the love, the protection of God. She's experiencing all of that through us, through her husband. If you're part of a family, are you willing to show sacrificial love to those who don't have a family? Or to those whose family are far away, and perhaps they're here in Lincoln on their own? Could they say that your family has become to them the wings of the Lord? And what about all of us, together, as a church family? Are we willing to show sacrificial love to those around us? Could somebody from outside come into TCM and say that this is a place where you can find the refuge and the protection of the Lord? That at TCM, it's a place where the wings of the Lord, as it were, are spread over you. Well, praise God that people have been able to say that, that they can say that. But let's take the initiative to ensure that more and more people experience the sacrificial kindness of God through us. And the only way that we can do that is by resting secure ourselves in the loving kindness that's been shown to us in Jesus, our Redeemer.